thanks for coming. I want to just for a moment share personally, this has been a really blessed week or week and a half for me. Because when you need to teach something, you need to study it. And I really feel like I have spent the last week and a half with Ma, which is just a wonderful thing. We're going to talk in a little bit about the value of reading the saints and studying the saints and all of that. My nature is a little bit more on the philosophical side. So I want to talk about that before we get into, in a sense, the details of her life and all of that. What is the value of really studying the saints and what does that do for us? But before we do that, I want to chant and meditate for just a few minutes. And I found an exquisite chant on the internet with Ma singing that I'm going to play tonight because I want to invoke her presence. Then we'll pray first, we'll do that, and then we'll meditate for 3 or 5 minutes or so afterwards. Ma passed away in 1982. So she's a modern saint, a modern self-realized great saint from India. So it's very easy to find, if anyone's interested, videos of her on the internet. There is a video of her with Master on the internet. Because again, since she was more modern, it's easy to find these sorts of things, and it's wonderful. So I found this great chant that I will play now. It'll take me just a moment to boot up. These things are a lot more fun and a lot more helpful and engaging for us the more participation there is. So you don't have to dive under your seat. I don't call on anyone. But the more that you want to participate in it, we're friends here trying to do something together more than watching me make a presentation, if you know what I mean. Because we're really here to find God. And to do that, our consciousness needs to be engaged in whatever we're doing. So to the extent that you're able to really get into what we're doing tonight and not simply be like watching television of someone doing this, the better it is. So that said, you can't interrupt me. It is impossible to interrupt me because sharing together is the reason we're all here. So I don't have this big plan, but I'm going to go through the evening, and as things occur to you or you have a question or something I say that you personally would like to expand on, please feel free to do that because, again, we're building something together. Okay? One of the things that really struck me as I spent the last some amount of time, you know, preparing for this evening was how different the saints are. And I want to start with a little story that really struck me. I'll talk more about Ma's life in some detail, but this part at least. Ma had 3 younger brothers. Each of those brothers, Ma was very proper and very devoted in everything that she did. Everything she did well. And we'll talk about that as we go through her life. She actually was a housewife for a little while and did all of those duties. She cooked and cleaned, and everything she did appropriately and excellently. She had some responsibility, you know, these large Indian families, for her younger brothers. She was totally devoted to them. She virtually raised them, did everything that they needed, all of that. Okay? Each brother died prematurely in turn. She showed no grief whatsoever. And your first thought would be, what is that about? You remember when Master's mother died, he was wailing, and the song Dark Eyes that Swami wrote was about that. It was a very traumatic-seeming experience. So what's going on here? I mean, Master wasn't less of a saint than Ma, obviously, and Ma was not cold-hearted compared to Master. What's going on? This gets back to what I mentioned at the very beginning. Why did the saints incarnate in the first place? What's going on? Why are they here? We are trying to find God. A great soul like Ma incarnates for one reason and one reason only. She did not have karma left. She incarnated to help us find God. So it's as if everyone's trying to get home. All right, we all want to get home. Some of us are over here, and some of us are over here. So this great saint winds up with a bunch of followers who all need to go this way to get home. And this great saint winds up with a bunch of followers who all need to get this way to get home. Then the saints pass away, and the followers fight each other. Because this group is saying, we're supposed to go left. And the other group is saying, no, you idiot, we're supposed to go right. Okay. And we get all confused. The saints come for us. So we're Master's children. And our job is to tune into him and his way. Now, he was very clear when he said, you should only read my writings. and those of the saints on our path. And he named Ma. Now, technically speaking, she wasn't really on our path, but what he was saying is the lessons that we can absorb through studying her life are the lessons that you personally need in order to find God. And how could he know that? Because you're his child. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says all of Krishna's soldiers look like Krishna. What does that mean? They didn't all literally look like Krishna. You could tell them apart. Okay, what it meant is Krishna had a certain vibration and he called to him his own. Over the years, many people, I've spoken with professional choir people who have come to visit Ananda from time to time, and nobody gets it. They say, how big is your congregation? 7,000? And I say, no, it's much, much smaller than that. And I say, well, how could it be smaller than that? Your choir is so sensational. You must be drawing from 5,000 people to produce that many good singers. It's remarkable. Actually, and these are professional choir people. Krishna's soldiers look like Krishna. Swami nearly became a professional singer. He draws his own. So in studying the lives of the saints, it's not just, though it includes, obviously, it's not just to uplift us, which is essential, of course. We want to keep our vibration as high as possible, our consciousness as high as possible. But it's also to tease out the lessons. Why are they being this way? What do we need to learn? Because all of the pains that we feel in our life come from some level of not seeing the world the way it actually is. If I go through my whole life and I think that this clipboard is a refrigerator, I'm going to have problems in my life. And then I'm going to blame the clipboard. And I'm going to blame God. And I'm going to blame everything but the fact that I'm confused. So all of us, unless you're self-realized, and if you are, you should tell me because I'm embarrassing myself. But unless you're self-realized, we're all here to learn lessons. And we can learn those lessons often. It's a change of perception. Swami said something incredibly interesting once. He said, we are so close to being free. This close. It's this little change of perception. And I suspect that everyone in the room at some point or another has had that sort of experience where suddenly it's almost like this moment of clarity and you go, oh, what's the problem here, right? But then what happens? Maya grabs us again and the clouds come in. Maya is the Sanskrit word for measurer. It means to measure. Saints don't measure. They don't judge anything. I don't know, for those of you who were here when Asha was speaking on Sunday, she talked about Swami going to the Portiuncula where St. Francis was. And he was praying, how can this be so sweet and so powerful? And after a long prayer, he got the answer. Francis never judged, measured anything. So to go back to Ma, so what we want to do as we go through the evening is try and tease out what are the lessons here. Ma used a term called Kala, which meant, there's no English translation, but it's sort of divine mood. And the reason she used that term is because when we're talking and someone says to you, I don't know, what would you like for dinner? What they're actually asking is, what would please you for dinner? What food would you kind of go, oh, goody, about, right? Ma never worked that way. It never mattered to her what was going on anywhere. All she wanted to do was do God's will. Now, God's will sounds, I'm going to do God's will. You know, it's a little heavy. So she has this Sanskrit term that she used. But it was really, how can we put it? If you have something on a piece of wood, just some object on a piece of wood, and you push it, the more friction there is, you know what I mean, between that thing and the wood, it's kind of hard to push. Ma had no friction between herself and anything in the world. The slightest puff of inspiration was enough to get her to completely change what she was doing. We're all a little stuck. I like it my way. You know, this would be really good if it weren't so salty, right? There are literally millions upon millions of these, and every one of these is in our spine. A saint has purity in the spine. So the energy can just go up and down with no obstruction. And the obstructions are all of our opinions and our tastes and our likes, and I don't want to go here. How do we pray too often? Lord, I'll do anything you want, but not Tuesdays. If you knew how busy I was on Tuesday, right? Isn't that fair? So the more of that stuff we have in here, are we really doing what God wants us to do? Or is it just a reflection of our subconscious and our desires? And for Ma, there was none of it. Everything she did was a Kayla. Everything she did was just to serve others. I want to read just a tiny section because Master went to see her in India, and she immediately recognized him. They had never met before, and he got there, and she immediately ran to him, and the people who were with Master were puzzled, thinking, you said you never met her before. But she knew. Okay. So then they had this conversation. So Master said, please tell me something of your life. And Ma always referred to Master as Father. Father knows all about it. Why repeat it? She evidently felt that the factual history of one short incarnation was beneath notice. I laughed, gently repeating my question. Father, there is little to tell. She spread her graceful hands in a deprecatory gesture. My consciousness has never associated itself with this temporary body. Before I came on this earth, Father, I was the same. As a little girl, I was the same. I grew into womanhood, but still, I was the same. When the family in which I had been born made arrangements to have this body married, I was the same. And when, passion drunk, my husband came to me and murmured endearing words, lightly touching my body, he received a violent shock, as if struck by lightning, for even then, I was the same. My husband knelt before me, folded his hands, and implored my pardon. Mother, he said, because I have desecrated your bodily temple by touching it with thoughts of lust, not knowing that within it dwelt not my wife, but the Divine Mother herself, I take this solemn vow. I shall be your disciple, a celibate follower, ever caring for you in silence as a servant, never speaking to anyone again as long as I live. May I thus atone for the sin I have today committed against you, my guru. Even when I quietly accepted this proposal of my husband's, I was the same. And Father, in front of you now, I am the same. Ever afterwards, through the dance of creation, though the dance of creation change around me in the hall of eternity, I shall be the same. That's very inspiring. I don't actually consider myself the same all the time, so I have a ways to go. But what is she really saying here? This is her whole bhav. As I said at the beginning, each saint comes in to bring a particular lesson to the world, an example to the world. And we need to get it all right. Eventually, each of us will get all of it right. Master was not more this or more that. He was here for us, so he showed more of a particular quality. Do you see what I mean? It's the showing of it for us because that's where we're tuning in and that's what we need to grow into. But every saint is equal. It makes no sense to compare an absolute. Once you're fully in God's presence and have that as your only motivating force, you're just doing what God wants you to do. For her, this constant dispassion about things happening around her was a constant theme in her life. And you can see how that would play out with her brothers. People were very surprised. But the lesson in that is, we are ever the same. Nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. Do you know when you look at a five-year-old child, and that child is doing what I like to think of as big business? I was just sharing this with Karen. It was cute, actually. She has a very sharp memory of when she was, I don't know, seven or something. And she lived in rural Pennsylvania. And she was at a little stream, you know, in the woods. There's this little stream. And she was building a dam. And it was very important. And she was seven, and she's building this dam. And she'd get just the right rock and put it in the stream and pack it with the mud. And it felt so important. But when we're an adult looking at that, don't we think it's cute? Because, you know, what are they doing? It's this little street. Think about it. That's how God sees us. We're doing all this important business all the time. All of this. Oh, this is so important. I've really got to make that flyer good because, like, you know, the universe will fail somehow if I don't get this thing just right. I mean, when we look at it, we laugh. And there's nothing wrong with that because, as I said, everything Ma did, she did excellently. We don't get out of this planet by failing out. We need to master everything. But to really master it, means to get pure enough in our own spine that that aspect of God can flow through us in an uninterrupted way. And appearances are not always clear. You know, somebody went to Swami many, many years ago, I don't know, 30 years ago or so. And the guy had nothing, and he was sort of dressed, not literally rags, but clearly very old clothing, you know. And he went to Swami, and he kind of went up to Swami and said, "Hello, Swami, I'm a renunciate." And Swami was always very kind, unless he needed to not be completely kind. He did whatever God wanted him to do. So he looked at the guy and he said, "You're not a renunciate, you just don't own anything." It's all about this. When I say we don't get out of here, we have to get out by graduating out, not by failing out. Wherever we have resistances, anywhere, that's karma. Because God is everywhere. There is nothing to resist. And if we don't see that, if we don't see that, then we have karma there. Which is not a bad thing, but it just... So Ma incarnated to bring these sorts of lessons to her disciples. Now what's interesting is Master said, Ma is one of the saints that we should read. I mean, he didn't say you have to read, but one of the ones in our lineage, so to speak. I want to share another story relating to that point that was very personal for me. There's a book called The Miracle of Love by Neem Karoli Baba. I'm sorry, by Ram Dass, the American Ram Dass, about his guru, Neem Karoli Baba. And it's a wonderful book. And I read that book. I'd been in Ananda a pretty long time, so I probably read that book 15 years ago. I maybe had been around 15 years at that point or so. And I really enjoyed it. And when I finished the book, I felt really out of tune. And I was really struck. I just didn't feel Master's presence. And it was, I didn't like that feeling. It was very unsettling. And when I say that, I don't mean like I always see Master walking around with me hand in hand. I don't mean that. But there's a certain vibration, you know, and I just felt out of tune is really the best way to put it. And I thought, what is going on? And then I realized I got spiritually confused. I read this great saint, and it's a, you know, books like this. I spent 2 weeks with this great saint. And I love the stories, and he's a cousin. I mean, he's a good yogi, you know, it wasn't some other complete thing. But I just got a little spiritually confused. Master said, read the saints of our path. And forgive me, I know Ma and I know Saint Francis, I'm not remembering, he named a few others. So it was a great blessing for me again to be able to read that. But I wanted to start with that context because I think that gives us a context when we talk about Ma, how to plug these things in. And her lesson was, I am ever the same. Nothing is happening out here. I had an experience once, you know, the Guru Day retreat that we do here. And I always really enjoy those. And every once in a while, you know, you're doing something that you've done a lot before, but you go like that and something happens. And I had this very strong insight for me. On one level, I think this is obvious, but you know, those powerful insights happen just deeper and deeper. Right? Master defines self-realization. We're perfectly in possession of the kingdom of God right now. We just don't know it. So it's not a new true thing I discovered, but I knew it a little more deeply. And the thing that really hit me in the middle of that long evening was, it's all just stuff. And I really got it, and it really hit me. And I feel different since that evening. It's all just stuff. Now, you know, for those, I mean, I have a number of friends here. I'm not the kind to do a halfway job on things. I don't have no energy. I don't just like sit around not doing anything all day. So that's not the problem. Okay. It's not about that. But for me, personally, getting the idea that it's all just stuff gets me less intense about things, less disturbed by things, less frustrated, less upset. Because I'm real pitta, so that's more my nature. And this was incredibly helpful. It's all just stuff. Asha tells a delightful little story about herself. She was, I think, this is a long time ago, I think she was in her apartment. She used to be a 108, 102? 108. I got it right the first time. She was in 108, and she was doing things and running around, and you know how it is. You get into your space, and you're doing all this stuff. And she kind of heard this voice. It wasn't a voice, but it was this great insight. What's your hurry, honey? It's just one damn thing after another. Okay. Ma was here to tell us, easy. She was very big on chanting. chanting was a big thing. It's one of the reasons I wanted to play that, because to hear her chanting really brings us into that space. She's very big on chanting. Chanting gets past the conscious mind. Ma was very traditional Indian. You know, I mean, she would break out of, I should say, I mean, in certain ways she was. She had total respect for her parents, total respect for her husband, all of that. She was married when she was 12. Her parents did not yet know what a great soul she was. So she was married at the age of 12. She and her husband did not live together, which is not atypical, actually, until later. When she was 18, he got a new assignment. He worked in a police department. He got a new assignment. She came. That's where that story that she mentioned in the AY is told. And she said after that moment, occasionally, he would have a subconscious thought, totally subconscious, something about being physically attracted to her. She would, this is an adorable story, she would sniff out his subconscious thought. She would go into ecstasy. He would begin to chant to bring her back, which was something he did often. She'd basically go off somewhere. He would want her on this planet. So he would chant to bring her back, and through his chanting, his subconscious thought went away. Isn't that cute? What a clever thing to do. He became one of her great disciples. After that story in the AY, he took initiation for her and became a great disciple. His name was changed to Bolanath, which was his monastic name, essentially. And he became her guardian for his entire life. He wound up passing away before she did. And he was a beautiful-looking man.
He took the vow that he would speak.
Yes.
He would
serve her. I don't actually know. That's a good question. I don't know if he chanted, but he would serve her. He went with her everywhere, and he was responsible. Again, the saints come to bring lessons. This, on some level, this is not our lesson, because Master has a lot of work for us to do. But for herself, she simply wouldn't eat if her devotees didn't feed her. She never ate. She would never pick up a piece of food and eat it because she was hungry, because she was just there. So the devotees, of course, didn't want her to pass away. Fair enough. So they were constantly feeding her with her own hands. So Bolanath traveled with her everywhere. She was in a few locations, and she started to come out, so to speak. She was in a place called, you know, I'm not as good myself on all these Indians' names. Oh, I probably won't even find it. But Shabag Gardens. Okay, we found it. She was in a place called Shabag Gardens, S-H-A-A-B-A-H-G, I think. She was in Shabag Gardens. There was a very wealthy man who had met her husband and invited him to become the caretaker for this estate, essentially. So Bolanath was there with Anandamoy Ma. Her name was not Anandamoy Ma yet. The world didn't know who she was. And this man who owned the estate also was very spiritual. And so he was telling people about this incredible woman who was staying at his place, and people started showing up. And she turned to Bolanath, and she said, "Is this okay with you?" Because remember, she's the Hindu wife. She's totally respectful. Anything you wanted, he got. "Is this okay with you that all these people are coming here?" And he said, "Yes, it's fine with me." And she said, "Be careful with your giving me permission for this, because once this door opens, it will never close again." It was a powerful moment. And that was the beginning of her mission. And hundreds of people started coming. And she was there for a while. And then she went to another location for a while. And after, I believe, that second location, she traveled for the next 50 years. She never had a permanent place. And she would go someplace and she'd stay for a little while, and an ashram or a temple would spring up because everyone wanted, but it just wasn't her way. And then she would go. And when she left, again, forgive me, the names are not important so much, but when she left her main location after the gardens, she went to another place and they built a work around her a little bit. And she, you know, she was, of course, not interested in any of that stuff. It just wasn't her nature. She wound up, before she left, she spoke to every devotee that was there, personally, all of her disciples that was there, and then she left in the middle of the night with Bolanath and one other fellow, Baiji. And that was it. Because she knew that if she had put out in a public way, people would not handle it. You know, when Master went to visit Ma in India, they had a very, very sweet relationship. And Master, at one point, in front of all the disciples, I mean, the disciples were all shocked. They had never seen Ma be that way with someone else, but of course it was Master. So Master said, "Oh, I'm going back to America soon. Would you like to come with me?" And instantly she said, "If Father will take me, I will go wherever you take me." And all the disciples went nuts. They said, "You can't do this. She always travels with 25 people. You can't just take her." And Master said, how did he put it? It was so adorable. I don't remember exactly. Something like, "The plan proved to be impractical, as it was spontaneously growing to 10 times its size." Something like that. He said, so he said, "Well, I'm going to this other place. Oh, there I can go." So they wound up traveling together a little bit, which I thought was really adorable. So let me share one other little section I wanted to read. Yes, please, of course.
You said something about the devotees maybe being different.
Yes.
Between Ma and Master. And you said something like Masters, they had a lot of work to do.
Well,
what did you mean?
Our work is a work of intense activity. Mm-hmm. In some sense, you can kind of look at the whole path as a big funnel. There's God, and there's only one God. But then you have a master, a guru, an avatar, who is a different aspect of God. There's one God, but there's only one me, but I'm a husband, I'm a teacher, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm all these different things, right? So how many of me are there? One. Okay. People get confused when they think in Hinduism that there are all these different gods and goddesses. They're not. There's one God, and then there's David as a teacher, David as a husband, David as a this and that, I mean, all these different things. So those are just different aspects of God. So there's God, and then there's Master. But even more than that, then there's Swami. So that's our particular ray. So we are attempting to dissolve all of our karma and find God, but through this channel. Well, Ma's devotees are different than Master's devotees. It's not right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you want to learn to sing, you pick a voice teacher. Your voice teacher may not be better than my voice teacher, but it doesn't behoove you to go to a different voice teacher every other week because you don't get anywhere that way. So it's just like this. So Master's way and Swami's way, even more than Master's way, is one of intense activity. Mm-hmm. So Swami has seen to it at Ananda that we are constantly busy. There's too much to do, okay? It's not our path to sit around all day and meditate and chant. And some of us kind of would like to do that, but that's not our job. Now, it could be that we learned how to do that in previous lives, and now we have to balance that out. I mean, I don't know what the karma is. But to the extent that we're Swami's children, that's our path. Now, what Master was saying is to read the saints of other paths, the ones that he mentioned, will not confuse us. You can go to that voice teacher because her style is kind of like your style, and you might pick up a couple of good tips. But don't go to that teacher. She's so different. That's what happened to me when I read the book by Ram Dass. It wasn't in our lineage, and I confused myself. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that helpful? Any other questions or thoughts? Okay. So I want to read just this. It's just a paragraph. And this relates just to what you were talking about. This is Ma speaking. These are her own words. "I have told you so often, even within a group which, say, worship Krishna, there are differences. Not all of them adore the same Krishna. The aim of all spiritual endeavor is to realize that the Krishna they adore is the same Krishna being worshipped by others. That is, to discover the unity of all ways of understanding the Lord, the Ishta. To see yourself in everyone and to realize that everyone is in you is the supreme aim of spiritual knowledge." There is nothing happening. The measure, remember way at the beginning, Maya, the measure, all of these distinctions we make. Now, the spiritual path is very difficult in a sense because it's been called the razor's edge. And what that means is you're standing right here a little too far this way and you wind up measuring too much. But a little too far this way and you're not dealing with the material plane. There's a world here. And as we said before, we need to graduate out. Swami's joy symbol shows that arrow, remember, pointing back down to earth because we're here. We would not incarnate on this planet if we didn't have lessons to learn about being on this planet. As Yukteswar said, if you were too good for this planet, you would be gracefully adorning a different one. He had a way with words, right? So we're here. So we have to get this right. And that's Swami's vibration. So when Swami writes books on leadership, marriage, school, relationships, business, you know, all of these different things, what's he doing? We need to bring God into every aspect of the material plane. That's our job. Ma was offering people a different lesson. And her vibration, you can tell from some of the stories I've shared, she was just way up here. I mean, she didn't even eat. She was just way up here because presumably that was the lesson that her children needed to learn. And as any good school teacher knows, you have to relate to the child in the classroom. You can't have, this is how I teach. Well, that may be how you teach, but if the children don't understand it, this is not helpful. So each saint comes for us. And the sensitivity that's required is, for the beginning aspirant, is to tune into what's for me. Not, you don't find it here. You won't figure it out. But you find something that's vibrationally compatible, and like a magnet, you're drawn to this path. And once you feel that, now you have to do what's on this path. Because otherwise, we're just living in our likes and dislikes. You know, on some level, it's too easy, given our current reality in this world. As soon as you don't like something, you move, you do this, you do that. You know, you leave a relationship, you leave a situation, you quit your job, you move to another part of the country. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But if we're doing that because we're running, we have karma there. And then you just get to come back and do it again. And again and again. I saw a great bumper sticker recently. Back of a car. Born again. And again, and again, and again, and again. It was so cute. And of course, when you first read it, you think it's some fundamentalist Christian. You know, I thought that was pretty good. Let me just glance at this. Okay, so Ma was born in 1896. She passed away in 1982. So Swami was there. A sweet little story about Swami. Swami went to visit her in the 50s with Dayamata, actually. And Ma said a very peculiar thing to him at that time. Ma said to Swami, would you like to stay with me here? And Swami always wondered, why would she say that? I mean, she wasn't trying to, you know, he's a great disciple, so I'll draw him to my work instead of Yogananda's work. It couldn't be that. And Swami thought later, maybe it was because she knew it was coming for him and how painful it would be. And then after the separation, he knew instantly that Ma would take him in. She loved Swami very much. She spoke about him. That she would instantly take him in. Swami couldn't get a visa to visit India for 10 years. He's denied, denied, denied. And in retrospect, Swami was sure that that was because Master didn't want him to go. Because if he went, he would have just stayed there and been very happy. But Master had a work for him to do. Isn't that interesting? We have no idea what's going on. You know, the visa's being denied, right? What would you think if you were Swami? Man, I've dedicated my life. You won't even give me a little solace at Ma's ashram. Why are you doing this to me? But we just don't understand. All of the pain that comes to us is that way. You know, it's a good thing that when you touch a hot stove, it hurts like anything. It's a good thing it does. Because if it didn't hurt, you'd burn your arm off. But when the pain hits, we don't appreciate it. Fair? But it's only because we don't understand. You know, if you go to a doctor with a stomach problem, and you go to the doctor and he says, oh, I can fix you up, and he gives you a shot. If you understand nothing about Western medicine, you think the doctor's cruel and nuts. My stomach hurts, so you puncture my arm? Thanks a lot. Now my arm hurts and my stomach hurts. But there's something going on here. There's a physics to this. There's a physics to this. And as we get to the point where we really accept that fact, everything that comes is a gift from God. And that was one of Ma's key vibrations. Everything that comes is a gift from God. Because nothing is happening here. It's big business we're doing. Picture that five-year-old in the stream. Nothing is happening. The only thing that's of value is finding God. That's it. Yukteswar said, all time is wasted that is not spent trying to find God. Now, on some level, again, we all know this, but the idea is to take that knowledge and make it more and more certain in our own hearts so that we really live that way. And more than live that way, so we see the world that way. The whole path can be thought of as seeing the world like a devotee sees the world. And in the Gita, right, they say it's white to the worldly man is black to the yogi. We don't see the world the way a devotee sees the world. We do at times. Those are those uplifted moments. But we need to sort of make a beachhead on the beach. You know, you make your little, and then we need to broaden that. So that's our nature all the time, is to see the world that way. That's what Ma was for. Because when you tune into someone like that, I had a really fun week and a half, you know, just to steep yourself in that consciousness. Now, for us, it's a little trickier. You know, as Master said, as Lahiri said, the household path is a little harder. Because if we could actually withdraw completely from the world, it's not as hard. But in the middle, I mean, I'm looking around, I know the work that everyone does here and all the details we have to wrestle with and all that. Yes, that makes it harder. But Master also said, you don't get strong by wrestling babies. You get strong by wrestling strong people. So we're given this, but Master's pretty smart. He knows what he's doing. So we've incarnated onto this path because we have that wrestling match to make. So for me, to read about a saint who is so otherworldly, almost in a sense, if I can put it that way, is just helpful. Because it takes some of that pressure off. No one in this room, I mean, I know pretty much everybody here, no one in this room is going to become more like Ma and become completely incompetent. That is not our struggle. Okay? So it's more, let go a little bit and get that voice like what Asha said. It's just one damn thing after another, honey. What's your rush? But we get so like that. You can't do that and feel Master's presence. It's one or the other. So it behooves us to hold that off a little bit and stay in that space as much as possible. Other questions or thoughts? Okay. Even as a small child, she never did anything to satisfy herself. She never cried. As a baby, she never cried. Isn't that amazing? She came in fully conscious. Later on, as a young girl, she told her mother the name of everyone who was present at her birth. What do you even do with that? I mean, it's like, you know, she had this little body that was like a little body. I mean, it wasn't very functional yet because the soul comes in and it kind of doesn't know what to do. It's like if somebody put you in an airplane to fly it, right? I wouldn't know what to do. It's like all these gears and lights and stuff. So you come into the body and, you know, you don't know what to do. But the consciousness, I am the same. I'm always the same. As a little girl, I was the same. When I got married, I was the same. No change. Isn't that? I just think that's glorious. Her, again, as a little girl, I'm going to share some of the early stories. See, her parents started to know something is interesting, but the world did not yet know. So even as a little girl, one of her closest friends, in a sense, was her maternal grandmother. Thakurma was her name. And Thakurma was very devout. Everyone in her family was very devout, which was quite fortunate, sort of like Jesus with Mary was very devout. Her grandmother would be reciting Sanskrit slokas and prayers, and the little girl would be correcting her pronunciation. What do you do with that? The 60-year-old is reciting these prayers and the 4-year-old is saying, that's not how it goes, Grandma. I enjoyed that. Yeah, Kayla, I mentioned. Kayla was her bhav. There was no will. And as I said, even as a little girl, there was no desire on her part to get a certain thing done. It was all just about relaxing and creating no friction with the world. So the slightest puff of inspiration, and she would go. All of us have gotten these little hits of intuition or guidance about something, and then your mind immediately comes in and says, oh, but that's silly. What would your father say? Oh, you don't want to do that. Oh, you're so busy on Thursdays. All of it. There was none of that for her. The slightest puff of inspiration, and off she would go.
Can I comment?
Sure, of course.
I remember reading about her, related to what you're saying, you know, she didn't have a guru. And so there were times when, you know, she would go into trance or go into some mudra. And, you know, what a great amount of faith and sort of just knowing without a guru what she was doing. I don't think there are a lot of people that we can cite on different paths that didn't have a teacher.
Yes.
That part's really amazing. About
well, there is truth to that, and it's very unusual in India. It has happened, and it's extremely rare. She said her guru was inside. Master himself said the only real guru is God. So it is unusual, and she did actually wind up taking initiation, is the way she described it, but not from anything in the human body. She said she took it on the inside. And I had actually never read that before, both about her, and I've never read that about anyone else. But there have been a couple of great saints who did not have a guru. But when you say in terms of faith, there I would differ. Because if you actually see something, it's not faith. Faith is one step further than your experience. One step. If your experience is to hear, faith is to hear. This is not faith. This is presumptuous. So faith is just a little further than your experience. How much faith does it take on you to believe that I have a hand in front of you? How much faith?
Not much.
Why? Well, you can see it. So for her, it wasn't faith. Faith was not the issue because she simply saw reality for what it was. If Jesus actually appeared right in front of you and said, would you get me that glass of water? You wouldn't go, oh, okay, right? I mean, you just get the water because it's right there in front of you. So when you get to a certain point, it's not really faith, it's sight. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So for her, it wasn't an act of faith because faith implies there's some resistance to overcome. She had no resistance. No one voluntarily hurts himself. In the AY, the great saint who said, remember, Master was speaking, was it Bhadhuri Mahashai, I think, had given up a fortune to become an ascetic. And Master said, oh, the sacrifice that little master, when he was young, the sacrifice you have made. And he said, what sacrifice? I've given up a paltry handful of rupees for bliss in God. It's the worldly people who make a sacrifice. They hold on to their stale bread and they give up the kingdom of God. So for him, courage is the ability to act in the face of fear. If you don't have fear, it's not courage. It's wonderful, but it's not courage. Because if you're not afraid, what's the problem? She had no fear. She saw what God wanted for her, and then she did it. Does that make sense? So it wasn't really a question of faith, if you see it. For me, it's faith. I've done some, you know, I mean, I had a strong intuition to move to Palo Alto and leave my work at Ananda Village. That was terrifying. That was faith. Right? Move to Palo Alto and start a public speaking business with no money and no credentials. That was faith. Because I thought it was nuts, but I felt like it's what Master wanted me to do. That took a lot of faith. But if I had actually seen it like it was right in front of me, it wouldn't take faith, just go do it. And that's how she lived. So it was always in that flow. And she was always, they said that she was just always totally graceful. In every situation, she was smiling, joy-permeated mother. She was smiling and laughing and playful and totally graceful. She would meet, at one point, what was it, the panel of philosophers or something. I forget exactly what the name was, but it was some group of philosophers went to talk to her, this great panel of philosophers. She answered, she was, I believe that that's correct. I think she was illiterate. That's right. She couldn't read and write. I'm not certain of that, but I think that's correct. So she would recite things and people would take the notes. I'm not sure that that's right. I may be confusing her with someone else. But in any event, this panel of philosophers came to grill her to really see who she was. They were all totally enthralled. She could recite the scriptures, not having studied. She just was speaking from divine knowledge. She saw God for who he was and could just relate that just like that. one thing that she talked about regarding the story with her brothers, with her younger brothers that had passed away. She said, "What is there to grieve about? Only you people see me move. Only you people see my body move. My brothers are just as present to me now as they ever were. They have simply moved into a different room of my house." Imagine to really see again, that's not faith, to really see the world that way. We can all say, yeah, I understand, but that's how she saw the world. So she never grieved. She never grieved. At one point, she felt, again, a Kayla is the way she put it. She had a Kayla come over her. And she felt, in order for me to serve the world more, it would be appropriate for me to learn what it is to practice sadhana. She never practiced sadhana. She came and self-realized. You know, someone asked Swami a very cute question at one point. He said, I don't remember exactly, but something like, if I'm doing my kriyas, and in the middle of a kriya, Master appears before me in the body, is it okay to stop doing my kriyas? And Swami said, yes! But isn't that adorable? Okay, so kriya really, as important as it is a means to an end. Once you find God, you're kind of home. You know, it's okay to not, once you've gotten your car where it needs to go, you can turn it off. It's kind of okay. Anyway, so she decided, see, even the language we use isn't right. This Kayla came over her, is the best way to put it, to practice sadhana. So she said she created a veil in her consciousness to create a separation between herself and God so that she could practice sadhana, and as she put it, to see what it's like to be a sadhaka. Because she didn't know what it was like to be a sadhaka. Isn't that interesting? I thought that was really interesting. So she practiced sadhana, never studying with anyone, and she practiced sadhana in every major religion. And she drew Muslim devotees. I mean, she just went through all of it.
When she was a young woman?
A young woman. This is before she went on her 50-year sojourn. She was still playing with, you know. But isn't that something? So she had to create a veil so she could learn what it was like to fight through it. And then she just meditated all the time. And then went boop at the other end, and then that was over. But
was there more about her experiences?
No, at least not in what I read. I mean, they just sort of talked about it. They said she practiced different. Because remember, for her, it's all the same. It's just all the same. It doesn't matter. We're the ones who are stuck in Maya, the measurer, the delineator. So for us, there are all of these distinctions and everything. There's just God. There's just God. That's really all that's going on. Master talked about all of this reality, as a picture show of light and dark. That's all it is. Nothing is happening. Nothing is happening here. But we're so married to it. You know that great scene in The Wizard of Oz where Toto pulls the curtain back? I mean, there's the guy behind the curtain, the wizard's making this big scary image, and Toto pulls the curtain back. And everyone says, hey, wait a minute, there's no monster wizard. This is just some jerk behind the curtain, right? Okay. But then the curtain sort of flops back. When you're looking at that image, you're still scared. But there's a part of you that knows that it's just a man behind the curtain. So both things are true. So we, if I may, are in that middle ground. There's a part of us that knows on some level that this whole show here is just being projected by a man behind the curtain and that actually nothing's happening. But when we're not looking at the man behind the curtain and we're looking at the scary movie of my work is hard, I don't have enough money, I feel sick, people hate me, I did something stupid, you know, whatever it happens to be. When we get caught in all that stuff, we're so mesmerized by that that we forget that it's just a man behind the curtain. But that's our job. So the whole path is about seeing more and more clearly all the time that it's just a man behind the curtain. It's all from God. It's all a gift from God to purify our consciousness. And when we don't like what's coming to us, it's like saying, but I don't want to take that medicine. I'd rather have a horrible stomachache. And God says, okay. I mean, God is the perfect gentleman. He's not going to force it on us. We need to see it and want it. Like if I walk up to somebody and I say, don't you love this shirt? Isn't this shirt fantastic? What are you going to say? No, I hate it. I think it's ugly. Nobody would say that. We need to want it. We need to want it. And the more we can taste the nectar of Master's presence, the more we want it. And it's the wanting it that really starts to change the consciousness. All the books in the world, all people telling you, all of that won't do it. Mom can tell you not to touch the stove 1,000 times. Touching it once is worth 1,000 don't do that. And Swami has said sometimes it's why repressing desires isn't so great necessarily. I mean, you have to use judgment. But if you repress it, you kind of almost want it more. Mom says, don't look in the closet. Don't look in the closet. You can't wait to look in that closet. Okay. Ma said, and again, this is more her path. Ma said, all spiritual attainment can be had by repeating God's name. She was very big on japa, and it's one of the reasons she was so big on kirtan. You know, the song we were doing, the chant I played at the beginning, was very, very repetitive, just 3 or 4 words, but it was just the name of God. In whatever way you choose, because in India, there are all the different names of God, and each family would pick a different. Their lineage within the family would be, you know, Hari or Rama or whatever it happened to be. But that was very important to her. I want to share a few stories, sort of the little miracle stories that happened around her life that were just extremely sweet. There was a close devotee of Ma's in India who got swept away in the Ganges at one point. And it was very, very perilous. As you go further up, as you're south, the Ganges is placid. But as you go further up and you're getting the mountain streams, it's pretty, they're rapids. I mean, it's dangerous. And this person got swept away, and it was a close devotee of Ma's, and was miraculously saved. She managed to get to the shore, and it was really, had been looking quite bleak. At that moment, someone took notes, because this very peculiar thing happened to Ma. At that moment, Ma's clothes suddenly became soaking wet. Is that cool? And the person who was with Ma, I mean, she was in the ashram, and suddenly she's just drenched. And so, you know, they sort of noted the time. It was too. And when this person finally got to the ashram, they compared notes, and it was right when the woman was saved in the river. Isn't that cool? I love that story. There was another time, a devotee of her. She had a lot of devotees sort of sprinkled around India. There was a group that would always go with her, of course. Well, you know what that would be like, the ones who were ready to completely give up their lives. But she had devotees in many places. One devotee had been in the woods in India and had a confrontation with a tiger, which is pretty serious stuff. I mean, you know, there are tigers in the woods in India. And it turned out to not be dangerous. I mean, it was dangerous, but it turned out to not be a bad encounter, and she was able to get away. Quite some time later, Ma was in the woods, two years later, with that devotee, and Ma turned to the devotee and said, this is where you had that encounter with the tiger, wasn't it? And the devotee had never told anyone. And Ma said, you still don't understand that I am always with you. There is no separation. It is you who see this body move. This body is always with you. Again, that little change of consciousness we need. On some level, if you think about it, I mean, I'm thrilled by these stories, but on some level, that story shouldn't seem special to us. To the extent it seems special is to the extent that we need more faith, because we don't really see it. If we really saw it, and when I say should, I mean, I'm not criticizing anyone, of course. This is why we incarnate on this planet. We're supposed to learn these lessons. You know, I'm always, if I may, just a little aside, I'm always surprised how much. I'm always surprised a bit when, you know, we come to Ananda and we really come here with an open heart and we want to change. But when someone points out a way in which we need to change, we go, no, I don't know, that's not me. Isn't that adorable? But it's standard. I mean, that's the ego protecting itself, so it's understandable. So we need to understand more. Master is always with us. He really is. It's not just like a metaphor. Because what we think is happening isn't happening. That's the problem. We get caught believing that the material world is real. Ma's existence was to say, no, it isn't. There's nothing happening here. Another story. Ma was in the ashram and suddenly asked that bandages, tourniquets, and splints be brought to her. And everyone looked around. That's what she wanted. So they got all these things. I mean, you know, after a while living with someone like that, I think even if your consciousness is not fully there, you kind of get the hang of it. That when someone asks you, you say, yes, Ma, very happy to, and you bring all this stuff. So they brought all this stuff in. 10 minutes later, a devotee was brought in a stretcher who had just had an accident in the street. And Ma tended to the devotee personally. The bandaging, she didn't know anything about medicine. Then the doctor showed up and said, who's the doctor who's here? Because everything had been done perfectly. I think that's fun. Oh, here's a wonderful story. She had a disciple in Britain. And this fellow had been wrestling with an issue and wanted to write to Ma to ask for counsel and advice and supportive energy. And he'd really been struggling. You know how it is. It's in your mind for like 4 days. And finally he starts writing and he throws it away. And he starts writing and he throws it away. And he writes the third one. And on the third one that he's writing in England, the postman delivers a letter with the answers to all of his questions. What do you even do with that? And he was just totally dumbfounded. I mean, you know. Now, I will tell you that once, going to be hard for me, I saw Swami answer a question that the person in the room had not asked. It was at the Crystal Hermitage. I'm sitting in the room, and it was a good friend of mine, and the person had this question and had this question and put her hand up, and Swami answered the question. And I think basically his attitude was, oops, I thought you had asked it already. I mean, oh, here's one other one. This is also very sweet. There was a small family. So I think, if memory serves, you know, the details don't matter. I think it was a husband and wife and a young girl. And they were all disciples of Ma, and they had been visiting Ma, and they had a garland that Ma had worn, which was a great blessing. And, you know, India, especially back then, and now even in the rural areas, still, India was a mess. I mean, the roads were poor, and you're going up these little dirt things, and it had been raining, and the car started to slide into the river, which is bad. And the little girl grabbed the garland and said, nothing can happen to us because I have Ma's garland. 6 years later, that family showed up at Ma's ashram, and Ma looked at the girl and said, oh, you're the one who made the comment about my garland. There is more going on here than what we think. In terms of Ma never doing anything for herself, I've mentioned a few times she was totally appropriate in everything that she did. So especially early on, she was the householder. I mean, it was her job to cook and take care of the house and do the chores. And, you know, in rural India, there's sort of a lot to do. At one point, someone noticed that her hands were worn to the point where they were bleeding from the work that she had been doing. She just never would mention it. It's like Saint Bernadette. I don't know, for people here who know that story. I think that's the school play this year, by the way, Saint Bernadette. It's a great story, similar sort of thing. She had worked herself where her legs were no longer functional. And Ma just never mentioned anything. And then, of course, people saw that and took care of her. Her body didn't matter. It just didn't matter. I'm eating, I'm not eating, I'm bleeding, I'm not bleeding. What difference does it make? There's nothing happening here. It's all about this. As she said when she first met Master, how could you possibly be interested in the details of one puny incarnation? But from Master's perspective, that was the Leela. So he said, now come on, give me something. Tell me something about your life, because this is the planet we're on. But again, she came for her devotees, and her message was, nothing's happening here. Relax. stay in connection with God. Yes, please.
It strikes me as you're talking that in some of the stories I've heard and books I've read about near-death experiences, that this is the consciousness that people go into, the same one that she was living with. Like in the book Dying to Be Me,
mm-hmm.
Anita Morjani talks about she's been declared dead now,
right,
on the table, and she's communing with her brother who's on the airplane. She's listening to the doctors down in the hallway, talk to her family, and she's having a sense of everyone's reality at the same time.
That's right, because once we're trapped in this body, and as a result of being in this body, our consciousness is limited. The ego is the identification of the soul with the body. So if we can disidentify with the body, we pop out, is really the best way to put it. I mean, Swami even said, when I'm gone, I will be able to help you each more, not less. Because trapped in a body, I mean, how many people can you have lunch with at the same time, right? You can't do it. But once you get out, you're free. So we're stuck here. We incarnate on this planet because, again, on some level we understand that, but we don't really get it. So when my foot hurts, it's really hard for me. You know, I've played with the concept. When I'm eating a chocolate ice cream, which, by the way, is really good, when I'm eating that chocolate ice cream, it's really hard for me to not feel that there's something in that ice cream that's given me joy. Do you see what I mean? But really, there isn't. But I'm not there. I can't do it. I've really tried with that. Isn't that interesting? I've really tried and go, really, it's just in me. And I go, well, after I eat it, it'll be in me. But that's not exactly what we're talking about. Do you see what I mean? So it's so hard. So while we're identified and stuck in the body, Swami talked about, towards the end of his life, a phrase that started coming to him often was self-definitions. He didn't ever used to talk that way. Not that it was wrong before, but just it's just something that came to him later. We're a bundle of self-definitions. I'm a man, I'm a this, I'm a that. And all of that narrows us. So when you pop out of that, you're totally expansive. And our goal is to understand that deeply enough so that the material plane no longer has attraction for you. And that's one of the things that Ma said. I mean, I have some writings of her words, not a biography someone else wrote. One of the things that Ma said sounded very much like what Master said. Once you've tasted divine ambrosia, how could you possibly want stale cheese? And then it doesn't take faith. Because once we've really experienced that, and we've all had touches of it, and you know, you talk about after death, when we're finally liberated from being trapped in this body, when our consciousness is liberated, all you remember of an incarnation are the spiritual highlights. That's what's, everything else you see was never real. But those times when we really touched Master's garment, that's what we remember, and that's all we remember. Because that's the only thing that happened that was real. The rest of it is just delusion and fantasy. You know? Oh, but I had this great day. What happened? Well, I found a $20 bill in the street or something. I mean, none of those things mean anything. All we remember are those highlight spiritual experiences. So once we pop out, we can have those sorts of experiences. But not till then. And we're on this planet because that's our primary lesson to learn. Not to reject it. Rejecting it is still karma. Not to reject it, but to get past it. Not to deny it, because that's still running. Anything you can't stand is your problem, because you can't stand it. If you can't stand it, you have a delusion, because whatever it is you can't stand is a part of God, period, because everything's part of God. So if you can't stand it, there's a part of God that you're rejecting. Well, you can't graduate if you're rejecting God, just because he happens to have ugliness on him right now. Remember, Master ate that spoiled food off the street? Right off the street. Food with maggots in it. No problem. Well, it's all God. Now, I would prefer chocolate ice cream, to be honest, but The point is well made. This is a cute story. Ma had a kela. I mean, she just had this whim come over her to go into a police compound. So it's in a big city, and it's just this big police compound. And she goes in there, and the superintendent of police for that city had really wanted to see her, but he couldn't get away because of all of his duties. So she went in, and she went to the courtyard, and she was in the courtyard, and the superintendent was thrilled. And she was with a small group, and then the rest of her devotees caught up, and they yelled out, "Ma, what happened? Have they arrested you?" And the superintendent said, "Yes, I have arrested her for the crime of stealing my heart and mind." I thought that was really sweet. Her coming and going to a village, remember I said she traveled for 50 years. She never had a permanent encampment. She would just travel all over India. She would come, and the village would just pour out. Everybody wanted Ma to be there, and they would be so happy and so joy. And they said that spontaneous kirtans would just erupt wherever she went. Everyone would want to just sing to God. It was like this. And then she would leave. Because as I said, I mean, if you're traveling for 50 years, that means you're moving, right? So she would leave, and everyone would be weeping and wailing. And someone asked her about this. I mean, you come, and it's this and this and this. What's that about? And she said, "My presence plants in them the desire for God. And when I leave, the pain of separation from God's presence will drive them deeper on the path." I thought that was sort of neat. Isn't that sweet? So you give people a taste, and very often on the path, for people who are new, I always call it, God sets the hook. If anybody's ever done fishing, when you fish, when you feel that first nibble, you're supposed to pull the line because it sort of gets the hook deep. And very often for people, I don't know for how many people in here, it happened for me, very early on the path, you have some sort of something, an insight, an experience, a taste of that joy that's pretty deep. And for me, it was a real disappointment because it took me, I don't know, 20 years to get back there. And you're thinking, come on, man, it's been 18 years. Give me a shot at this, will you? But so the hook gets that, and that's really what she was doing. Is she would go to the village and there was just this ecstasy of joy. And then she would leave and people were bereft. Now you've tasted the honey. Now you'll never be satisfied with stale cheese again. And she would just go all over India, 3 days here, 5 days here, you know, just enough to set that hook. Oh, this is cute. An initiate, someone who was seeking initiation, a disciple of hers, but not, he hadn't taken initiation from her, was from America. And he went to India, and wanted initiation. And she agreed to see him. And they set a time, you know, at such and such a time, come here, and I will initiate you. So he comes, and he gets there at whatever time it's supposed to be, 10:30, 10:30, quarter to 11, 11 o'clock, 11:15, 11:30, 2 hours. She keeps him waiting there. During the 2 hours, he's going through the whole thing. What am I doing here? This is crazy. And he even said, and I love this, he said something like, and his ego suddenly screamed, "Get out now. Go back to the States. Get married. Get a job. Rent an apartment. Get out of here now." Isn't that adorable? That's just what he wrote. I mean, this is him writing this story many years later. He knew it was all over. I just thought that was so cute. And he said, but the 2 hours was perfect. And part of his ego was, obviously she doesn't care about me. She's keeping me waiting. I'm a jerk. What am I even doing here? You know, I'm not Indian. I don't belong here. All this stuff is going on. He said, at the end of 2 hours, he had worked through all of it. And then she walked in and said, "Are you ready now?" Isn't that sweet? I love that story. I want to read one other little section here. This is a delightful book, by the way. Very short, inexpensive. It's on Amazon. It's called Om Ma, Story of Anandamoyi Ma. It's this little gray book. And it's just all sorts of little stories and things, and it's delightful. So if anybody's interested, I would recommend it. Very inexpensive. It's like $5 or something. Here are Ma's words about herself. "I say to you that I am a little child, and you are my parents. Accept me as such, and give me a place in your hearts. By saying mother, you keep me at a distance. Mothers have to be revered and respected, but a little girl needs to be loved and looked after and is dear to the heart of everyone. So that is my only request to you. Make a place for me in your heart. Isn't that beautiful? And I was struck, of course, because Master talked about Divine Mother. And his point was a good one. He said, I worship God as the Mother. Because the Mother is closer than the Father. The Father, we can say the male principle in the universe, tends to be more impersonal, the judge, the disciplinarian. But when something happens, you go, Mom, right? Very few people go, Dad, okay? So that's the comfort. So Ma, Anandamoyi Ma, took it even a step further. Even the Mother, there's this relationship like this. And Ma didn't want that. She said, think of me as the child. Think of me as the child. Take care of me. Think of me. If you're a mom with a child, you can't not think of your child. That's how she wanted our relationship to be. Almost nine. Let me just pause for a minute and just ask if there are any questions or comments that people have that they'd like to make, or please.
I remember hearing something that Swami was sitting with Ma and one of her devotees, and in chiming, because I may have this inaccurate.
No, it's okay.
That one of her devotees said, why do you always let him, you know, sit with you? And she said something like, he knows where the nectar is.
Well,
something like that?
Yes, that's very close. She said, the lake is filled with lotuses, and on each lotus is a croaking frog. Kriyananda is the bee that flies in and just takes the honey. She said to him, I have devotees that have been with me for 25 and 30 years. You have met me once, and none of them are drawing from me what you are drawing from me. Yeah, yeah, really beautiful. So he would have been very happy. I mean, Master's pretty smart, denying him that visa for 10 years. Because to be in the presence of someone like that, especially, if I may, when your heart has been savaged, it's easy for me to imagine he would have just moved to India and said, hey, the heck with this. And Swami said, there would be no conflict between being Master's disciple and being there. Remember, Ma practiced sadhana in all the different religions. So, you know, she was not sectarian that way. It wouldn't have bothered her at all. But he realized that Master had a work for him to do. Now we're back to intense activity. Our path is a path of intense activity. We're building something for Master. And what we're actually doing, to be fair, to really take it home to where she's at, we're building something for ourselves. This is our consciousness that we need to purify. Master doesn't need World Brotherhood colonies. He could make World Brotherhood colonies like that if he wanted to. We need to make World Brotherhood colonies because our action of making World Brotherhood colonies will lead us to liberation. That's our job. And I can say that because Master's my guru. And that's his job, so therefore it's my job. It was interesting, at the early years of the village, there were people who really liked the idea of spiritual community. They were really into it. But they weren't so into Swami. That doesn't actually even make sense. If you have a really close friend who's working on a project, you want to do the project. Do you see what I mean? So the heart gets engaged. Actually, I should correct that a little. They weren't as into communities. They were more wanting to just like meditate all the time, let's say. Swami was trying to build this community, and many people were a little resistant. They wanted to just meditate all the time. If you really are with someone that you're devoted to, if we're good friends, whatever you're interested in, I'm interested in because you're my friend. And people slowly got that and would cooperate with Swami, and then the grace could come through because that was Master's vision. And as I said before, it's not just Master. Master has lots of disciples. My feeling is, I mean, I've never tested this, so I can't be sure, but if there were a room of devotees and there was a bunch of Ananda people in it that I had never met, I believe, though again, I've never tested it, that I could just, in that room, go and point out the Ananda devotees because it's a little bit of a different vibration. And in some cases, I do know that's true because I have had that happen on occasion. So what does that mean? They're all devotees. But it's our way. We need to do it our way. And so all of this work that we do together is for us. And it's been selected for us. That's why we're master's disciple. If we needed to learn to be much more removed from the world, we could be a disciple of Maz. And that's what, you know, that's what they need. Other questions or thoughts?
Have you met very many disciples of Maz?
A few, but just a few. I mean, people would come through the village. I myself have not done that much travel. I think I mentioned the one day in India that we spent at Maz Ashram where I would have met a bunch. I was sick, which was sort of too bad. But I've met a few. But I've met a few disciples of, I've met a few Satchananda disciples, just different of the saints. And there's both an immediate connection. I mean, anybody who really wants to find God. And they're all cousins because they're yogis. There's an immediate connection, but I can also feel the vibrational difference. They're cousins. They're not brothers and sisters. And that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, strawberry is not better than vanilla. I mean, they're just two different flavors, but they are different. So I can feel a little bit of a difference in just the bhav, the way they carry themselves. And, you know, because again, we're Swami's children. Whereas I can meet an Ananda devotee in Croatia or something, and immediately it just feels like, oh, okay, hi. So, it's sweet. Other comments or questions? Okay. Thank you all. Thanks for coming, and thanks for being a great excuse for me to teach this class and spend a week and a half with Ma. I really appreciate it. So, thanks.